Turn then to the gospel appointed. It's Pentecost 26, or as the hymnal has it now, proper 27 for year A, which is Matthew 25, 1 through 13. And the traditional name is the parable of the wise and foolish maidens. We'll talk about that as we go through the text. But I think you can see how the parallels aren't exact, but this clearly builds on what Dr. Robbie was developing from the Amos passage in terms of the sort of assumptions people live with. And you actually, I think, then see here Jesus as the same sort of prophet who has to, I think Dr. Robbie said, disabuse people of their false notions about what the coming of the Lord will mean for them. Okay, let's get into the text, and then there will be some questions of interpretation and connected with how do we preach on this parable. Matthew 25, verse 1. Tota homoiothesetai he basileia tun uranon deca parthenois. We actually had the same beginning to the gospel last week. Tota here is just sort of the next point of the story, not necessarily talking about real time or chronology. Sort of Jesus begins this next parable. Homoiothesetai, notice from the familiar homoiao, is here in the future. Several people have noted that when the comparison verb is put into the future, the parable generally focuses more on the parousia, the coming. This is what the kingdom will be like on the day of the Lord's return. And this parable does make an interesting connection between our situation now and what that day will be like in the future. And I think, like the Amos passage, then is saying, you should be doing certain things perhaps differently now because this is what it's going to be like. Okay, so it will be like the kingdom of heaven. France, in his commentary, sort of paraphrases that as this is how God's purpose will be worked out. This is what God, taking his reign, ruling over all things, will be like. It will be like a story I'm going to tell you about 10 parthenois. Parthenos, here, the standard word for a young woman or a maiden here. It means someone of marriageable age, but who has not yet been married. France, I think, makes a good note here that this is a place to really sort of admit our ignorance and be cautious about claims we make about knowing what first century weddings would be like. We're really not sure what role these 10 women played, and he says calling them bridesmaids or something like that may be assuming too much and sort of throwing us off track here. They're more closely connected with the groom than the bride. And they're just labeled as young girls. France, in fact, likes to call this the parable of the, sensible and silly girls. I think that's his way of translating it. So we will we'll just continue to call them maidens or girls. And we'll base their role in the story simply on what the story tells us. So this is what it tells us they're going to do. Hytenes, the indefinite relative pronoun, these 10 girls, in this sort of hypothetical story, who, labousai, from lambano here, we're going to get feminine participles because we have feminine main characters, so don't think these are all infinitives, who, taking tas lampadas heauton, taking their own, you see the reflexive there, lampadas. Of course, we picture these as lamps, and that may be a false cognate. You still see people divided. Are these lamps or torches? France, again, argues strongly for torch, and in some ways it fits better with what happens later on in the story and does seem to be more appropriate for a nighttime out-of-doors procession, which is what they are getting ready for. So they take their own, that is, each of them carries one of these, a torch. Ex aelphon, they go out, eis hippontesin. This word, hippontesis, in terms of meeting or confrontation, occurs in the New Testament only in this idiom with eis, meaning you go out to meet someone. We'll see it twice in this parable. They go out to meet, or they went out to meet the bridegroom, to nymphiu. Okay. So that's the general picture. This is what's going on. Now, for some details to set up the action that happens later. Pente de ex auton. So five ex auton of them, with ex there making the partitive genitive even more clear. Five of the group, eison morai. Now this is the word that gives us moron. We have to be careful. Bedeg says foolish or stupid. When I was growing up, stupid was considered a bad word. We weren't supposed to say that at home to each other. So you want to be sensitive to how this is going to come across to your audience. Silly, maybe a little bit too superficial here. Perhaps the best definition is the one Davies and Allison point out, that we also have a parable about wise and foolish builders in Matthew 7. The wise person is the one who hears and acts accordingly. The foolish one is the one who hears good stuff but then doesn't do it. So who knows it but doesn't act on the basis of that knowledge. And that's the distinction we'll see with these, that some are paying attention to their situation and some aren't. So five of them were morai, foolish, and five phronimoi, sort of perceptive, clever, smart. Okay. Verse 3. Hygar morai labusai tas lampadas auton uk elaban metha auton elion. Now here's how we're going to see that they are foolish. Four, giving the reason for saying they're foolish. The foolish ones, labusai, this could be temporal or it could be concessive. When they took their lamps, or even though they took their torches, their lamps, uk elaban, they did not take metha auton with themselves elion. That is oil in the sense of extra oil. And France says, a torch without oil is like a flashlight without a battery. It's just not a lot of good. And notice the pronouns here, the auton and he-auton. There's going to be a stress throughout the parable about each person being prepared for herself here. Okay, now that's what makes them foolish. What about the wise or clever ones? Why do we call them sensible? Hi de phronimoi, so you have hi gar morai and hi de phronimoi. But the sensible ones took oil en tois angeois. Don't stick a lambda in there and get angels, even though that's what it looks like it should be. But this is a word for flask or some kind of vessel. Metaton lampadon heauton. So they took oil in flasks, that is a separate container, with their own lamps. Now verse 5. Chronidzontas de tu nymphiu. Genitive absolute with the bridegroom here as the subject. The verb from chronidzo means to take time in doing something, to linger, to fail, to come when expected. And I think it's important to see that the sense of delay is strictly from the perspective of the women here, the girls. They were planning on the bridegroom being there at a certain time. It's not that the bridegroom was unable to come when he wanted or something like that, but why he's delayed is not part of the story, simply that he doesn't come as early as he was expected by those waiting for him. So then what happened? Anustaxon. From nustadzo, not a very common verb, but it means to become drowsy. Pasai, note the feminine there, all of the girls became drowsy. Kai ekafudon. And they were beginning to fall asleep. So you have aorist, imperfect, and then we're going to get a perfect in verse 6. The progression of tenses here is pretty interesting. That everyone became drowsy. They were all starting to fall asleep. Now 6, meses de nuktos, in the middle of the night or at midnight, krauge gegonen. A cry happened, is the way students usually translate it. But a cry arose or arises. It's a perfect. It's like it's still ringing in the air. It's almost a switch to the present for a dramatic effect. But what's important isn't the sort of initial sound, but it's the content that they're all still dealing with. Idu ha nymphios, behold the bridegroom. The Dag suggests as one of the glosses for Idu here, what do you know? That just doesn't seem to quite capture the excitement and surprise here. So I think something like, oh, look, maybe even wake up. Ex erkesta, ace ap antes en autu. So before we had hip antes en, here we have ap antes en, a synonymous sort of expression. Go out to meet him. That is, this is what you've been waiting for. This is why you're here. This is your whole purpose in being here on this night. So then, verse 7 again, now carrying the story forward. Tota egerthazon, pasai hai parthenoi ekenai. So all of those virgins or girls, they all then got up, woke up, got up. Sort of both ideas can be included here. Kai ekosmeson tas lampadas heauton. This is from kosmeo, to adorn something, to get it ready, put it in order. But this doesn't mean they were, you know, fixing their makeup, but they were getting their lamps ready. Each one, again, heauton, her own lamp or torch, getting ready to use them. And if you're thinking lamps, you know, trimming the wick and that sort of thing, if torches, then probably re-soaking them in oil so that they'll be ready to burn. Haide morai tais phronimois apon. But the foolish said to the wise, okay, there you have the two groups, dota hemin, from didomi, this is the aorist imperative, give to us ek tu elayu humon. So from your oil. So they weren't asking for them to hand it all over, but just to share. Hati hai lampadas hemon spenuntai. Spenuntai from spenumi is in the present. Is it our lamps are going out, are just now out? The verb means to be extinguished. Again, either idea is certainly possible here. They don't have enough oil to reignite them, or the oil in their lamps is being used up. Then 9, apokrithezon dehai phronimoi legusai. But the wise ones answered, saying, Me pote ume arkese hemin kai humin. Me pote means there is no time when, that is never. This will never be true. And ume is the, remember, the strongest negative you can use in Greek. There will certainly never arkese be enough. It will certainly never be enough, that is the oil, hemin kai humin, for us and for you. Poruesta malon, rather go, poruumai, there the imperative, go pros tus poluntas, go to the cellars, kai agarasete he autais, and buy your own, or for yourselves. This seems very cruel on the part of the wise ones, but some commentators point out that it's true if they share the oil and all the lamps go out, or all the torches go out, what sort of welcome will that be? Wouldn't it be better to at least have some light there to welcome him than for no one to have a torch? But we'll wait on answering that question for a minute here. Let's finish the story then in verse 10. Op erkomenon de auton agorasai. Okay, genitive absolute. Auton, there's the subject. They, that is the five silly girls, going out to buy, with agorazo, aorist infinitive, expressing their purpose. So when after they went out to buy, ha eilfen nymphios, the bridegroom came. Kai hai hetoi moi, and the ready ones, the prepared ones from hetoi mas. And sometimes this is an adjective with only the two endings, and that's why you see it looks like a masculine, but it's as serving as the feminine plural there. The prepared ones, eis eilfon met autou. They entered with him, eis tus gamus. Gamus here in the plural. Josephus, for instance, makes a distinction between singular and plural. It's hard to know whether that's the case here, but gamas often refers to the wedding ceremony itself, and gamus, the gamoi, the plural, excuse me, to the all the extra festivities that go along with it, so the feasting, the partying. So here they're not going into the ceremony so much as the reception, the feast that will follow. Kai ekleisthe he thira, and the door was closed. Sort of need sound effects here to hear that sort of echoing of the door slamming shut. 11, hysteron, that later or afterwards, erchontai kai hai loipai parthenoi. Also, or even the rest of the girls, the maidens, coming, are saying, they come saying, Kyrie, Kyrie, anoixon hemin, Lord, Lord, open to us. Ha de apokrithes apen, but he answered, said, Amen lego humin, uk oida humas. Truly I say to you, I do not know you. Let's just finish the last line and then we'll come back to some of these points. Gregorete un. Now, this is a second plural imperative, but to whom is it addressed? Are we still talking to the, is this the Lord speaking to the girls? It seems like this now is Jesus speaking to his audience. Watch, therefore, be awake. And we've seen this in these parables here in this last week in Jerusalem as a theme. Be awake, be alert, remain alert, because uk oidate, you do not know, tain himeron ude, tain horon. You know neither the day nor the hour That is the general time or the more precise time. So that's double the reason to remain awake and alert. Just a few points here to follow up on this. It is interesting that in the Gospels, Jesus himself is the only one who uses that formula, Amen, Lego, Humin. Truly I say to you. So here you have the question, is this the Lord of the story saying this, using Jesus' words, or is this then sort of the identity of the characters is now being revealed, or we're switching from the symbol to the thing symbolized? Someone said the story gets sort of swallowed up in the reality it's trying to describe, and we see this happen in a number of these parables with an eschatological point, that you don't suddenly say, now here's the application, but you suddenly find we're talking about real people now, not characters in a parable. So when they cry out, Lord, Lord, is this the way they would address their friend the bridegroom? Well, perhaps, but we're already switching over to the cry then of humanity on the day of the Lord. Open up to us, you know us. And the uk oida here is then something much more deep-seated than simple recognition. You know, I can't see you, who you are in the dark. We're not in the right kind of relationship for you to be admitted. Of course, one of the great historical questions with regard to this parable is, does the oil symbolize something? Let me just share this with you. Davies and Allison give a full catalog of all the things it's been said to symbolize. They ponder whether it might be good works. You'll see there are some real problems with that. But they say other suggestions for interpreting the oil have been humanitarian acts, Christ himself, love, the Holy Spirit, grace, faith, fidelity to duty, personal relationship with the Lord. They say a great number of differing opinions led A.B. Bruce to remark, the oil is anything you please. It's been interpreted so many different ways that no particular identification here has led to a satisfying interpretation. I think, just sort of close with this, that France is on the right track when he says that the point is that readiness in whatever form it takes isn't something that can be achieved by a last-minute adjustment. That goes back to Dr. Robbie's point that the life of the people of God waiting for the day of the Lord is not one, okay, we're believers, now we don't have to do anything, and when he comes we'll all be happy, but this is calling the person to a life of faith that's to be lived in every day until his return. France does say, on the other hand, the readiness depends on long-term provision, and when that provision has been made, the wise disciple can sleep secure in the knowledge that everything is ready. That is, that all 10 of the girls sleep for a while. The difference is what happens when they wake up to the cry that the bridegroom has come. Some were sleeping for good reason because they were ready. They were at peace. They weren't worried or anxious about what was going to happen, but looking forward to it with joy. And that's a point Franzman wants to bring out with this text too, that our waiting period is not one of anxiety and fear, but it's a time of joyous expectation, looking forward to this like you would to a happy celebration like a wedding. Okay, well, I'll stop there. Any questions before we close? Okay, well, thank you all for coming.